The aim of our Living with Diabetes podcasts is to share information and inspire, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. DRWF will not be held liable or responsible for failure to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who's familiar with your situation. Views, information, or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent opinions, standards, or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them.
Hello and welcome to the latest podcast in our series, Living with Diabetes, brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I'm Claire Levy with the second part of our special edition looking at the question of stigma and diabetes. It's a complex issue from the way the public and even professionals interact with people living with diabetes to how we can even stigmatise ourselves. I've been speaking with an NHS diabetes consultant who also trains colleagues in working with people with diabetes, a chartered health psychologist specialising on the impact of the disease, and two people living with diabetes, one a colleague from DRWF and the other is a high-profile entertainer who's only recently started talking about their diabetes publicly. In this podcast, we'll look at practical ways to deal with stigma, including hints and tips from our professionals. If you are living with diabetes, you may well have experienced ignorant, condescending, or simply rude comments, not only from the public and even family members, but also possibly healthcare professionals who we would hope know better. Stigma can manifest itself in many ways. In part one, we tried to understand how stigma works and the impact it has on people living with diabetes. Diabetes stigma is often defined as negative attitudes, judgments, discrimination or prejudice against someone because they have diabetes. It's rooted in the false idea that people with diabetes made unhealthy food and lifestyle choices which resulted in their diagnosis. I asked diabetes consultant Dr. Mayank Patel if we can eradicate stigma in diabetes.
It's going to take a long time, Claire, overall, to eradicate stigma. I know already a lot of work is being done around this area because it is exhausting for lots of people. So I think education is still the fundamental piece of this, be it through offerings like this or through offerings on diabetes charity websites and pieces that everyone can read. I know personally, whenever I do any kind of teaching myself or newly qualified doctors about diabetes care in hospital, one of my slides shows the Language Matters document, and I ask people openly, please read this and think about how you refer to people with diabetes and how you open your conversation. So I'm doing my bit locally to open people's minds to that. For Generation Next, we're lucky enough in Southampton to host every year a significant number of medical students who rotate through our department by attending for a diabetes-themed ward round with members of our team. And again, before they attend, we prepared a lecture that they're supposed to watch before they come to help them set the scene about diabetes. And within that, again, Language Matters is mentioned at the undergraduate stage for them to have that awareness that early about the need to be careful how people are described with diabetes, how you open your conversations, all the stuff we've talked about.
Because often you're in hospital, aren't you, dealing with people living with diabetes, but they're in hospital for something completely different.
Yes, so 9 times out of 10, Claire, in Southampton, but in most hospitals, yeah. You're in hospital for a different reason. It might be for a routine elective operation, for example. It could be because of a nasty bout of pneumonia. It could be anything, you're right. And the being admitted for a diabetes reason primarily does happen, but it's much less often. I'd say, you know, like 10% of the patients I see with diabetes are there for a diabetes reason. And that can be useful if that person's case is brought to our attention to think about what elements their diabetes care needs additional bolstering or changing, for example. And the mental health element often comes up. So I'm always, when I ask about, when I see a patient, I'll always ask, you know, how are things going mental health wise? How are things? And I think people value that question because it's quite, it comes as quite a shock to some people. Why is a doctor asking about my mental health? I think it's reminding us that it's all connected. Being physically well requires individuals to be mentally well. And the two things together can work wonders in living well with diabetes, for example. I think for those listening, those with and without diabetes, if you can get behind this movement around trying to challenge and call out diabetes stigma is really important. Finding ways to learn and educate yourselves, if not in the know about diabetes, and challenging those myths and misconceptions by everybody is really important.
So it really does come down to education about diabetes. Here's health psychologist Professor Catherine Barnard-Kelly.
You can minimise misinformation and replace that with facts. I think that would be helpful. I think if we could raise awareness of how difficult living with type 2 or type 1 diabetes can be, you know, the very daily challenge, the relentless nature of having to manage your blood glucose levels every day, all day, for the rest of your life, you know. I think if you could help people to understand the mental burden, the exhaustion that goes with that, it would go a long way to improve understanding and maybe make people a little less mean.
Okay, so we've talked about the person living with diabetes and how they feel. What about their spouse, wider family? How does it affect them?
Oh, that's a good question. How does it affect the family? So, and it does, because diabetes is often described as a family disease. I think people want to help. You know, you love somebody, you want to do everything you can to help them. But, you know, diabetes is such a unique condition that people want different levels of help. So I think open communication is really important. And I think being very honest about the support that you want or that you don't want and the way that you want it is really important. But it's important to remember that you are going to worry about people. I know as a mum, you know, so the boy's dad, he was in the military, so he was away for 8-9 months at a time. So it was just the boys and I for very long periods of time. And it was, I just remember being incredibly lonely. Just feeling very, very alone. Feeling that nobody really understood. And I think as a healthcare professional myself, you know, I fall into two groups. I kind of straddle both of them not very well, you know. So yeah, I think for me I was lonely. I was scared. I was lonely, and I would find it incredibly frustrating when you had hassles that other parents didn't have, you know. So, and it's very difficult to hide all of that from your child because you know that it's tough enough for them.
And did you feel stigmatized by your child having type 1?
Yeah, definitely. I would say I definitely felt stigmatized because I just couldn't understand. His pancreas doesn't work. Like, seriously, get a grip, you know? Like, yeah, I think people are quick to exclude children with diabetes rather than just put in a tiny bit of effort to say, what should I do? Mm. And I think, to be fair, things like CGM systems with the shared facility and the AID systems now are a huge help for kids, you know, because you can help remotely. You don't have to always be there with your child going, oh, God, why is my mum here? Why is nobody else's mum here? Why is my mum here? You know? So, yeah, I think that technologies are a huge help, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, things have changed a lot.
Yeah, but there's cool stuff out there now, like DigiBee. DigiBee didn't exist when my child was 4, you know. You know, like DRWF, the days that you guys do are amazing. And there's so much more support these days. There's so much more understanding. I would urge anybody living with somebody with diabetes, if you're feeling alone or if you're feeling that it's hard, seriously seek help because there's so much good help out there these days.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast, and our special edition on stigma. So what do people living with diabetes experience? colleague, Darren Tipper, who joined DRWF 5 years ago, but has only recently been diagnosed, wants to encourage people to feel confident in their own knowledge so as to ignore ignorant comments and understand enough to avoid self-stigmatisation.
I suppose the first thing would be to try and not let the ignorant comments get to you. You need to know the facts yourself. Educating yourself is important, but you don't need to educate everyone else too. That's my job. You need to be able to understand diabetes yourself in order to be able to speak correctly to your healthcare professional and get the answers you would need and the help you need from them. But you shouldn't be made to feel bad because someone else is ignorant. So feel bad for them, embarrassing themselves. And most of the time, people you speak to are trying to help. They just think they know about diabetes, but actually they just know commonly spread misinformation. So ignore them. Even try to see the funny side if you can. Get your information from reliable, validated sources like the NHS or charities that have information quality checks, such as the PIFTIC. Of course, read our diabetes patient information leaflets. I mean, I would say that, but they were a huge help to me.
That's really good advice. And is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think I have a fairly unique perspective. Doing the digital marketing for DRWF, I'm often on the social media channels, sharing our news stories and moderating. And every day there are trolls on there saying things like, just stop eating donuts, or self-inflicted illness. And these views need to be countered and the truth explained. Not to educate the troll, but to stop this ignorance spreading. Putting that right message out there is very difficult. It's a fine balance. We have to let people know that different people are at different risk of developing type 2 diabetes, and there should be no blame and no guilt about getting ill. We also have to let people know that healthy lifestyle changes can decrease your risk of developing diabetes and help keep you well if you have it. And the two messages don't sit together well in some people's minds. Some can't see the subtleties on how both can be true, but people just need to be clear that, except for in extreme cases, type 2 diabetes is not self-inflicted, and yes, one can make it better with lifestyle changes, and one does not contradict the other.
Entertainer, comic and children's TV presenter Dave Benson Phillips was impacted by a type 2 diagnosis 5 years ago, but only recently started talking about his condition publicly. What hints and tips does he have?
Again, not a one-size-fits-all, but on a personal level. Once I knew what it was, I was fine with it. I had a battle with it. I'm still battling with it, and there will be people that will be doing so. But the first thing you have to do, as with anything which is life-affecting or life-changing, is address it, because let's face it, it's a big elephant in the room. If it's diabetes or anything you've got, it's like when you talk to people who've got things like, you know, they're facing the big C, and it's a bit like, I've been around people who have denied it, and I've been around people who've said, do you know what, I'm going to kick your backside about it. So it's one of those things. But on a personal level, once I knew what it was, and I could address it, it was fine. Coming out has been a recent thing. So that's a thing, yeah, talk to me in a year and we'll see how we are. But for me, on the personal level, it was knowing what it is, knowing how to treat it was the next thing. So once I began to find out about stuff, that was lovely. The biggest thing that's helped me was sitting and doing a broadcast with a load of people and finding out that there's such a thing as a community and that there are people who suffer it. When I put it on my social networks, it was kind of liberating because, of course, you had a few people who then came back to me and said, you know, I'm type 1, I'm type 2. And they were saying about stuff, about what they do. I've been talking about this sensor that I've got on my arm. Whoa, it's still sticky. I'm quite amazed. You know, so it's been that. So for me, it's lovely. But the one thing that I haven't done with it is to let it define me, or to let it sort of really affect my life in the way where it's the second thing that comes out of my mouth. You know how I said earlier, if I say, hello, my name's Dave, I'm a diabetic. You know, for me, I still say, hello, my name's Dave Benson Phillips. I entertain children. I go around the world. I do this. I do Macathon. I sing. I sign. You know, I do lots of entertainment work. Would you like me to do a show for you? That sort of thing. And my diabetes comes pretty low down on that list. You know, I say it now. Some people know it, so they say it for me. But, you know, it hasn't defined me. It hasn't sort of held my life hostage. And that's a very important thing as far as I was concerned. You know, so address the situation, learn to live with the situation, and do not be completely and utterly ruled by the situation. You know, you still have to look after yourself. You still have to make sure that you eat and drink properly. And, you know, but don't deny that you have to do it, because I did that for a while. And I didn't take the pills, didn't take the meds, didn't do the exercise. And, you know, I got through, but there were times when I came a cropper. So you just have to embrace it. It's just a part of it. It's like, oh, I don't know. I can't think of anything else that's like that. You just address it. You just address it. Also make sure that you've got, you know, sweets and waters, and you're not far from things that help you be less wobbly. Have a phrase that you use. For me, the word is wobbly. If I'm feeling a bit, I'll feel a bit wobbly. Or even an expression, like there was a long old time where I used to do like that noise that Paul Whitehouse would do in the Fast show. So I'm a little bit, and like my wife would look at me and just go, why have I married you? And I'm trying to say to her, look, I'm feeling a bit weird. But so there was that. So what else is there? Also finding out as well, Mrs. Phillips did a great thing for me where she said, look, you're not alone, Dave. There are other famous diabetics. And we did this thing where we sat with the internet and we typed in famous diabetics. And there were like loads of people that were famous who, you know, they had the type 1 or the type 2. And I would never have known.
Absolutely. I think also is finding good quality information. There's a lot of information out there, isn't there, that is wrong. But, you know, charities like ourselves and the other diabetes charities, we have good quality approved information that is excellent for people to build in that good self-management. And I think that really helps. And for people to share that.
You see, well, that was the thing. And when it happened to me, it literally was where I live, and I'm going to say the area. I'm in the West Sussex area, so that's Ada and District and everywhere else. And we have, you know, we have a good NHS system down here. We really do. But like everywhere, it's a little bit stretched, so things are a bit fractious. But I was made to feel initially that I was alone. So like I said, the first introduction, and what a baptism of fire it was meeting Abbots, who then introduced me to their gizmo, which I've got on my arm. And then thankfully, these people that I sat with said, there are these communities. They gave me links to go and join, people to talk to, all the bit. So I'm kind of like the new convert. So this whole thing, like you say, with having good, positive information is a wonderful thing.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
And that brings us to the end of this special two-part edition of our podcast on stigma. There's also lots of useful information about living with diabetes and how to support the charity, together with the latest fundraising events, news and information on our website at drwf.org.uk. This is Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Our thanks to everyone who talked to us, and also to you for listening. This latest edition of the podcast, Living with Diabetes, was supported by Abbott.
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2024, Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.